From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made on the afternoon of Monday, December 24th. You haven't bought gifts for everyone on your Christmas list and you trudge out to the stores. It's a zoo. Half the human population is there. Some people are enjoying it. Many others have those blank stares, a kind of catatonia that descends on those of us fortunate enough to have the economic means to buy a bunch of gifts, but not necessarily the desire. Is there another way? To state the obvious, of course there is. There are many ways to approach gift giving, and we're going to discuss different approaches this hour. We invite you to share your own approach to holiday gift giving. Email us or call the program this hour, and you can email us at connections@wxxi.org. We don't intend to be Grinches this hour, but we want to explore ways to offer gifts that have real meaning and value. And I just want to say at the outset, as the host of this program, you know, I don't know if we do this every year, but we've had this kind of conversation a few times over the years. And I always appreciate it because I think people have a lot of different approaches to gift giving, whether to give it all, and if so, how to approach it. And I don't think there's any one perfect answer on this. I certainly don't have the market cornered on that. I don't mean to at all be condescending to anybody this hour because I struggle too. So I'd love to hear from you this hour. And let me welcome our guests who all come very highly recommended for their own thoughtful approaches. Gwen Scott is a local actor. Nice to have you here. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Also with us is Reverend Colin Pritchard, pastor for First Presbyterian Church of Victor. Reverend, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.
And Dina Strasser is a writer and educator, knows Colin pretty well.
Yes. 25 years?
25
now?
Years. You guys have how many kids?
Two.
You have two kids, and they have some ideas on gifts for their kids and gifts in general. So let me just kind of go around the table and just start by backing up and asking our guests, do you dread this time of year in terms of just the expectation of gift giving, whether it's for family, friends, or otherwise, or do you enjoy it? Gwen?
Oh, there's absolutely some dread there. It's become less and less about, you know, how you feel about these people and how much time you're going to spend with these people, and more into, hey, you got me a gift. I'm going to come over strictly to get that gift, maybe spend 20 more minutes and then leave.
Mm-hmm. So a little bit of dread, at least, this time here. Okay. Dina?
I have worked very hard to make Christmas a joyful experience for myself and my family. So I'd have to say joy, you know? We've been working at it, like I say, pretty hard ever since our kids were born. And I don't want to say we got it down, but we have some you know, some procedures and some policies that work well for our families.
Well, so, see, and that's maybe part of the key here. Maybe that's what gives you that opening for joy instead of some of the dread, because I, like Gwen, have a little bit of dread at times because I feel like I've got a big extended family and family in different states and different questions every year on, are we exchanging gifts? And, you know, should it be just for the kids? Should it be the adults too? There's not really a policy. And it starts to feel like I don't know if I'm doing enough. Or it sounds like you at least have somehow cracked a code there.
Well, we definitely, I think, cracked a code for our little family, you know, our little nuclear family. And as far as extended family is concerned, we really, you know, just to speak really practically, we talk to and take care of our parents and our nieces and nephews. Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, really, it's just thinking about ways in which we can give without getting crazed, as it were. So maybe that's a note, maybe that's a gift certificate, maybe, you know, just for specifics we're talking about there.
Okay.
So,
Colin, what do you think? How do you feel this time of year?
Right. So there's the personal and then the professional, obviously, as a minister. Personally, it is great joy, and I'm privileged to be married to Dina, who handles most of moderating this experience for our family system. professionally, it's also a joy to be able to create some sort of alternative framework in how we view a season, not just a day, and what it is we can actually give to each other that is of lasting value. And I have the privilege of being able to speak to that publicly at length for a whole season. That's actually kind of a joy. The dread is the level of anxiety and frustration that I will encounter in others who battle this constantly.
Yeah.
Pretty much every Sunday morning, I'll just invite people to take a breath, and they need it really, really badly. Because the level of overwhelm and upset in what's supposed to be a season of great joy and expectation is impressive. So the chance to just breathe, I will encounter a lot of anxiety and energy. Personally, it's a wonderful season. The professional opportunity to frame it is a terrific privilege. And I'm surrounded by quite a bit of anxiety.
Well, and I think that word, I just want to make sure I say it again here. This is a conversation in a lot of ways about privilege. I mean, there's a lot of people in our world who don't have the means to gift give to anybody. And to the extent that we can even debate what to do with resources, there is privilege there. And then I take the Reverend's point on the privilege of being able to stand in front of congregations and deliver messages. And in some ways, not just ministered, but to kind of counsel and help help them maybe heal or breathe or calm down a little bit. So I'm really looking forward to kind of talking a little bit more with you about how you take that approach. So I appreciate all of that. And I know we're going to have some emails from listeners, so we will share your ideas as well. One thing I think that's instructive is to ask for a little bit of, you know, the experience you had growing up. And everyone had a different experience growing up. Gwen, how did you experience the holidays growing up as a kid?
Actually, they were really fun. Me and my immediate family, we have a few traditions that I try to, you know, keep going. And so the night before, you know, we were all still living at home, so we all ate dinner together, and then we would watch a movie or a TV show together. But then right before all of the kids were going to go to bed, we would play the Polar Express, and we'd all watch it together, and we'd drink hot chocolate. And then everyone would go to bed after that. And our parents would, in the morning, our parents would make us wait and they would come up with different excuses of why we couldn't go downstairs yet. Like, oh, did everyone brush their teeth? Did everyone make their bed? Oh, no, I see something over here. Now everyone has to go back. It was a very joyous occasion.
That's great. Dina, what about you?
My holiday experiences were actually deeply influenced by my German grandparents. They came over from Germany just before World War II. And so we took a really European approach to Christmas. So all of the good stuff about Christmas started on Christmas Eve. We decorated our tree and put it up on Christmas Eve. We went to midnight services and then opened our gifts in the morning. And then really it was a season for us. You know, I was raised Catholic, and so the Christian roots of Christmas in particular were a big deal for our family. So Christmas Day wasn't just Christmas Day, it was the beginning of 12 days of Christmas, and that was an entire celebration. So, and that I think it's also influenced my approach and our approach as a family now. You know, it's not just one big blowout orgasmic Christmas Day, right? It's a season to think about.
Okay. Thanks. Colin?
My Christmases were varied year to year. I'm a child of there's multiple adventures in marriages and divorces and families, and so who I was with and whatever was happening on a given Christmas it varied quite a bit. So there were Christmases that were extraordinary, and there were some that were challenging. But we were privileged to have the opportunity to create a different kind of consistency in the lives of our children. But mine was varied every year.
Well, let's talk about your approaches now. I'll start with Gwen. Your thoughts on gift giving, how you approach it, whether you have a system or an idea in mind, if you're feeling at least obligated to give gifts to anyone in your circle.
Mm-hmm. I used to feel a lot more pressure about the gift giving, especially, you know, being an actor. There's not a lot of money coming my way, but you know, I always wanted to share something with everyone that I gave presents to. I wanted everyone to know that I loved every single one of them, and I just needed to try to make sure that everyone felt happy. So it's been a little bit of a struggle trying to get gifts for everyone, but recently I've started cutting down on that and telling myself that it is okay if certain people can't get gifts. I can still spend time with them. We can sit down and we can play board games together, and that could be the gift. Or we could have a craft day where we make a bunch of gifts for our other families or something like that. And then that would be our gift, you know, sharing time as well as a tangible object.
That's great. And if you're making a gift, if you're creating a gift, you know, you seem like a more creative person than me anyway. I would feel very like that was a daunting task. How do you think about that?
Well, I've always really liked arts and crafts, but I usually will think back on all the time and all the time that I've spent with whomever I'm making the gift for, and think about, you know, this is the time where you can really say how much you know this person. What would they like? And one of the first gifts that I ever made was a snow globe for my mom with my brothers. So we got a big old mason jar and we cleaned all of that out, and we found little toys and trinkets that she would like that could have been a little piece of something that she gave us for a gift, or could have been like an angel or a tiny mug or something. She loves mugs. And then we would glue them on the inside of the lid and put all of her favorite colors of confetti inside it. So it would always have lots of little thoughtful pieces instead of just being the big picture thing.
When you talk about the decision you have to make, you know, as an actor, and, you know, some years better than others, and, you know, the decisions you have to make about what you do with maybe limited resources, how do those conversations go if you talk to a friend or family who you maybe in the past have exchanged with, and you want to say, look, you know, things are tight, let's maybe not exchange this year, or maybe let's keep it to a certain level? I mean, I just last week was talking to family members, and I mean, I think anybody can relate to having family members whose economic situations have changed, but there's still a sense that, well, traditionally we exchange gifts, so I guess I'm obligated to do something. And, you know, you try to initiate. I was talking to my brother last week and about initiating a conversation with a family member saying, no obligation, let's not do that this year. Mm. But their response was, well, we have to. You know, I mean, it's Christmas. You have to. How do the conversations go if you're having that? You know, are people pretty understanding, do you think?
For the most part, people were understanding. But there, you know, were some challenging times where it's like, yeah, I know that this is Christmas and it's the season of giving. But there's a lot more ways to give than just going to the store and buying a box set of bubble bath or something like that. Mm-hmm. I would always make sure I had a couple of ideas that I think they might like in the back of my head, so that if I did meet some opposition, I could be like, well, you talked about wanting to go do this thing. What if we just go to a play and dinner together or something like that?
Yeah, I think that's really well said. And even on the idea of like just going to the store and getting something just because you feel like you have to get something, often from a store or from a gift card. I think there are times where that works, and then there are times where you just feel like, I just have to have something to give you, so here it is.
Right.
And sometimes a gift card feels that. There are times where I feel like a gift card is like my way of saying, I don't know you very well. but then there are times this year, my mother is getting a gift card to sort of a fancy restaurant nearby because she and my stepdad have been through a lot. Mm-hmm. They do not generally go out and take themselves out to nice, or, you know, sometimes can't afford to go out to nicer restaurants. So damn right we're getting them a gift certificate to this place because I want them to have that experience. So that's our way of saying we do know you, you know. I think it just sort of is person dependent.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely like to go. If I don't feel like there is something thoughtful or significant in whatever it is that I am going to buy for this person, then I feel like it's lost the Christmas spirit. Mm-hmm. It could just be a random, you know, I found this bouncy ball. Here you go.
on the street, outside. Yeah. Here you go.
Hope you like it. Dina and Colin, what's the approach in your family? Again, two children.
Yeah.
What's the approach in your family?
You want to start? No.
Colin's deferring to Dina.
No, I start. So Colin will talk more about demoting Santa, which is the way we approach gifts as a whole. You know, Santa's a great guy, and that's pretty much the extent of Santa. And so we do ask our kids what they would like, but they, ever since they were small, we really set an expectation that they were not going to receive everything that they put on their list. And that the large gifts, like a bike or whatever it is, you know, like high leverage gifts, those were coming from mom and dad. Those were not coming from Santa.
Why did you choose to not allow your children to believe that they might have come from Santa?
Oh, well, let me be very clear about this. Santa was in our lives. Like grandpa would come over and we'd track him on the NORAD website. So Santa was a big part of growing up. But his role was very clearly delineated with our families. So he wasn't the person who was entirely responsible for every lovely thing that showed up under the Christmas tree. The vast majority of that were expressions framed as expressions of love from their parents. So that's how that's what we balance those things out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, just this year, my son was asking me about families who are struggling with poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And he was asking if Santa takes care of them. And I told him, no. I said, I want you to understand that we all have a role to be Santa for, mm-hmm. for different people in our society. And you have an obligation because you have way more than a lot of kids in this world. So I don't want you to go to bed at night comfortable that, don't worry, Magic Man from the North Pole's got uh-huh. those kids covered. Mm-hmm. I would feel like that would be the wrong message. That doesn't mean I'm dispelling a myth that he might choose to hold on to for a little while longer.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want him the comfort of thinking, well, there's inequality. I'm aware of it, but Santa will handle this. So
I like that. Yeah.
But I also, in that moment, and this is where I want to turn to the Reverend and counsel me now, I didn't know if that was the right thing to say.
Sure.
I struggle all the time with that with my son.
Right. And so in some ways, the faith practice we have is that we really become the hearts and hands of that which we believe. So it's not handed over to some almighty to take care of. We are the responsible parties for compassion. Santa fits in that exact same category, right? So I would honor your response very, very much. And the more we can have people in direct access to folks who are giving compassion to others in a way that is generous and not token, the more we are demonstrating things that we really value in the world. One of the huge advantages I have at the moment, like next week, Family Promise of Ontario County is a homeless family ministry that we just started, and it's countywide. But literally next week, we will have a homeless family on site at church for the whole week. I will be doing overnight shifts to just be in that space and be with people. And my kids are aware that that's happening. And they can come in and gather with the other kids who are housing insecure and food insecure at the moment and do homework and play some games together and do those kinds of pieces. So is Santa taking care of them? Yeah, Santa's taking care of them when you are face-to-face with your brother or sister here. That's why Dad takes this time. That's why Mom coordinates the clothing drive. That's why we are so much a part of what it means to collect food for the food pantry. There's this advent of gratitude, a reverse advent calendar that we do, where you collect a food item every single day for the season of Advent, and that becomes this extraordinary box of food that we collect as a family and then as a congregation and give to our local food pantry. And so part of our Christmas is, let's get these things. And I guess I would highlight also the Angel Tree Gifts piece, which is families who have been identified as being in need. And for years, we've had our kids select a desired gift from somebody that's their own age and gender. So there's somebody just like you who said, this is what I want for Christmas. Now we go out shopping together and you get them what you would like. So that there's a direct connection, and that's part of your Christmas giving into the world. And we specifically chose, okay, there's a 13-year-old boy, there's a 15-year-old girl. Mm-hmm. Now you shop for them, and we'll help you do that.
And Reverend, just because this particular hour we're talking about holiday, Christmas gift giving, yep. obligations, traditions, and different approaches, it's a very targeted conversation. But what you are mm-hmm. describing about Santa Claus— mm-hmm. I would guess applies to the faith writ large 12 months out of the year, in that, I mean, if you are a follower in the faith of Jesus, mm-hmm. you're trying to understand the way that Jesus lived his life, you do not strike me as the kind of reverend who would say, prosperity gospel is great, and don't worry, we're all going to paradise as long as we believe, so don't worry about them.
You would have that correct.
Okay. Not a prosperity gospel kind of prayer. So just briefly, because we'll get back to gift giving in a second, mm-hmm. How do you send that message all year long, that the tenets of faith mean at the holiday times, we are all sort of Santa for,
right.
for kids in need. We are all, but throughout the year, we are living that in ways that don't wait for the afterlife, that don't wait for paradise for believers.
Right. So generosity and compassion are just fundamental to the ideas of what we do, right? And generosity is, if we are so blessed to be in community, and I happen to be the pastor of a church that's in a fairly privileged neighborhood, there are absolute pockets of significant poverty. But as a whole, the community is a relatively privileged suburban community. And so people recognize, look, you have more than enough. And so generosity is, if you are in a space of blessing, your job is to fulfill the Abrahamic covenant. I will bless you so that you will be a blessing, a command in the earliest understanding of the faith patterns. And that's actually a command. The idea is, if you are in a space to be generous, you are required to be so. It doesn't make you better. It's not a momentary choice. It's not a box you check. It is an ethos of your life if you're going to claim to follow this belief structure. And the compassion piece is to suffer with. I constantly impressing people to financial donations to missions are wonderful. Thank you for doing that. But there's nothing that compares to direct interaction with your fellow human being. It's the difference. I talk about it with my confirmation kids, is the difference between a good thing and a God thing. The good thing is still good. Please do that. But the God thing is when you are face to face. God thing is when you can know a name, tell a story, share a bit of your life, and be side by side in communion.
Sure. And then, Reverend, this time of year, I think there's a lot of us who look for ways that we can, organizations, charities to support, et cetera. And let me speak for myself. Let me not speak to sort of like cast judgment on others. I'm sure there have been times where I went, boy, I was busy all year. I didn't do a whole lot of charitable work. But, you know, I wrote a check at Christmas. And, you know, sort of a little bit for my own conscience, probably, which is a good thing, as you would say.
Please keep doing that. WXXI likes their donations. So does the First Presbyterian Church. So does the Salvation Army. Those are good things.
Yeah, I hear that. But is there a risk that we can write a check around this time of year and think it's sort of a get off the hook for the rest of the year?
Oh, it's not a risk. It's a reality. Yeah.
Yeah. So, listeners, if you want to call the program, it's 844-295-TALK, and I've got some emails to read already from you as we talk about alternative ways of gift giving, or just how do we appreciate what it means to be in a position to give gifts, and are we overdoing it at times? Do we kind of get overcome with commercialism, and how do you like to do it in your family or among your friends? 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. And Dina, again, four gifts at Christmas, then.
Yeah.
Four different themes. So I like this. This is a similar theme that we heard from a listener, a friend of mine named Kim, who was on the program in a past year. Let's hit it.
Okay, let's see if I can do this. Something to wear, something to read, something you want, something you need. So it's got this nice little rhyme to it. We also throw in something to eat. So.
Okay.
What are you making faces at me for over there? Oh, I need to be putting my... closer to the mic. Okay.
He's used to, you know, speaking to big congregations. So Dina, again, it's something to wear,
something to read, something you want, something you need.
Okay. Are you able to give us some examples of what some of those things might be?
Well, our kids...
Don't do this year, because they haven't opened anything yet.
No. What I'll say is that something else we sort of add on to that list occasionally is a thing that encourages an experience together.
Absolutely.
So I'm almost always giving them camping gear of some kind or another. Mm-hmm. And then we use that when we go out and hang out in the Adirondacks or in the Thousand Islands we went to this summer. So the idea is that the gift springs you into an experience together.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. Something to read, is it something that would be on their list that you know that they kind of want? Or is it like, as a parent, I would like you to read Walden.
Yeah. So it's kind of both, right? I was an English teacher in the Rush Henrietta schools for 13 years. So I had my list of books that I really wanted the kids to read. Like, you will read Anne of Green Gables. But they also, we're so grateful and so lucky to have two kids who ended up as readers just by themselves. So they often have their own list of things they want. And that's a great example, I think, of where a gift certificate can come in really handy.
Sure.
You just hand it over to your kid and say, here is the ability to be autonomous in your decisions about books.
But do not go to Barnes & Noble and use it at the Starbucks.
Yeah.
Maybe you get it to your local smaller booksellers and to all of the independent bookstores
Yes.
listening to this program. Shout out to all of you. To take nothing away from Barnes & Noble or anybody else, but we are grateful for the independent booksellers in our community.
Yay. So Liftbridge Bookshop.
Liftbridge is a great example. So,
Small World Books.
There you go. So I like this. And something to wear, would it be, again, something, did they give you a list, or are you thinking, you know, I was cool once, so you're going to wear that? I'm sure you're still cool.
Pants for everyone.
Didn't Becca wanted a Legend of Zelda hat?
Ooh. Oh, she sounds great.
Doesn't that sound?
So that worked beautifully, too, because she needed a winter hat. So we got her the one that she wanted. So ways in which you can double dip like that are useful.
I like that. And then want, they can give you a list, or you happen to know what they might want. I think, you know, younger kids, yours are a little older now.
They're
younger kids
now.
Are so easy.
Although it's funny, it kind of has backfired now that they're older. These restrictive, I don't want to say restrictive, but, you know, the procedures we have for giving, because they're not actually all that materially oriented now. So we're sort of reaping the benefits, but it backfires a little bit too. What do you want for Christmas? And they're like, and it takes them weeks almost sometimes to figure out what
come
it
up
is
with
they,
something.
Right. And then they get the great idea and it's like January. So I got to write it down for next year.
want, need, wear, and read. Four interesting categories. Listeners, let's go ahead and read some of your emails. And then again, if you want to call the program, how do you approach gift giving? Do you do it differently? You know, does your family have you changed how you do it over the years? Have you changed how you do it with your kids? 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Tom writes to us and says, I recently heard about a charity called RIP Medical Debt. And there's he sends a link to a story that highlights what they do with the headline, Two New Yorkers Erased $1.5 million in medical debt for hundreds of strangers. Tom says, my family doesn't need more things, so my wife and I donate in other people's names. This organization is getting our donations this year, RIP Medical Debt. What do you guys think of that? I like that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Fantastic.
I mean, it's not an organization that I heard of, but...
I'm sorry our inadequate social net requires that sort of response, but yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad it's being done.
I mean, frankly, yeah, the concept of medical debt is its own conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But,
absolutely.
But yes, it can destroy people's lives. Mm-hmm. And so what a neat idea to say, you know what, that's where the money we might have spent on the holidays for gifts, that's where it's going this
yep.
year. Good for you guys. Really, really cool stuff there. CT writes and says, for years, my registered nurse mother would only accept new cotton socks for men and women as a mm-hmm. gift. She collected them all year long and then would fill a van and drive to the poorest county in the United States and work for free at a clinic treating diabetics' feet, giving them all new mm-hmm. socks. So now I tell the people in my life not to give me anything, but if you have to give me new socks, I can take them to one of the local shelters in Rochester. I never get as many as my mother did, but I agree with her that the best part is that I don't have to, I have to dust socks that we give away to those that need them. So
that's wonderful.
That's also
right.
A really, really neat idea. You want to add to that, Reverend?
Well, it's just, it's a conscious taking care of all of us. And in any, that's inherently the Christmas story. And I won't go on a sermon, but it's inherently the Christmas story. So any of these actions that are fundamentally selfless, you will receive a certain measure of joy out of this in and of yourself. And that's just a side bonus, right? That's terrific. But when you are truly giving so that it is of benefit to another and you may not receive direct thanks or any kind of elevation of status or repair of family relationships or any of those kinds of things, gifts given that others might have life at all is inherently of value, and that's exactly the nature of the life, but also the opportunities are more prevalent in this season.
Let me grab a phone call. This is Brenna in Rochester. Go ahead, Brenna.
Hi there. So we've got a couple of different ways. I mean, obviously there's nice, you know, physical, tangible gifts that we like to give, you know, something that maybe they weren't expecting, you know, or you know, maybe kind of combine a birthday and a Christmas to do like one larger gift. But we also like to give experiential gifts. So maybe, you know, tickets to a concert that they would like to see, or, you know, for a couple of our, you know, family members that have kids, we like to do museum membership for them. So again, it's something they can, you know, use year round, enjoy it as a family together, and it's not cluttering up their house with another electronic toy for their kids. And then something I noticed that my son put on his Christmas list this year, he just turned 20 yesterday, is, you know, he had a couple of things that he would like, but then he also mentioned, like, you know, donate money toward Samaritan's Purse or Compassion or something like that to, like, donate an animal to a family that would need it in a foreign country. Hmm. So I like that he was, you know, he was thinking of that. We've done that in the past, and I like that that was on his list this year, so we're definitely going to do that.
Really good stuff. Brenna, thank you very much. And I think just another set of great ideas. I love that Brenna and her family are thinking charitably. I think a little bit like Brenna, I spent years trying to figure out what to do for my father. I actually have something really good for him this year that's a creative gift I'm really excited about.
Don't tell anybody.
I mean, and there was one year where my stepmother found an old diary of his from 1966 when he was 21, and he and two friends took a trip around Europe for the summer, and he literally had a nightly diary. And so my brothers and I recreated the diary, and we retraced where they went. We tried to figure out the places they went. Are they still open for business? And we got a bunch of slides from a friend, and we made this book. And we told him, this is your Christmas gift for all time. This is next year you get nothing. It's the residual of this incredible thing.
This incredible thing. And one time only gift.
Honestly, I think that was like 7 years ago. And what I've done just about every year is I make contributions to charitable organizations he supports, because my dad needs just about nothing, and he will ask for nothing, which is fine. I think it's great. So he always appreciates that. This year, though, flipping it back to it, more of a traditional gift because I found something I like. But, Brenna, I really like that. I like that idea a lot. I love, if anybody ever gives a gift to me, which is just the note that says a charitable contribution has been made in your name to X, Y, and Z, that's about as good as it can be for me. So I love that. And then the question becomes, how do we foster that in our kids? I mean, how do we foster that among people around us? Some of it, again, comes from privilege, but Reverend, any thoughts on helping kids think in a charitable way that makes this season isn't just about what am I going to get?
Yeah. So again, it would be really important to make a distinction between I have to do this good work, my one good deed of the day, so that I can help the poor other. that becomes really unhelpful. But the more it can be, I am part of this community, and as part of this community, I have the ability to contribute to it. So alignment with people like themselves who may or may not have the same sort of food or housing or wealth, but do have the same life in this space. Mm-hmm. So I really push as much as possible into community and communion. It's direct contact kinds of pieces. And so when you're in that space, oh yeah, we're probably going to, you know, get lunch for your friends here, but they're your friends here.
Yeah.
And so that the value is found in community. The resources are just what help nurture that relationship. It's not a token gift from the Almighty to the wanting. It's what it means to be in community. And you know what? You have enough right now, so let's share that.
Sharing it with people who have needs but are not less than us.
Exactly.
That's another thing that I think is really hard, because even well-intentioned, I'm sure I've done this at times, I've got this idea that I want to raise a child who's really thoughtful and giving. But if I teach him, well, as long as you do X, Y, and Z, then you can think about yourself for Christmas, that's also probably me making a mistake.
Right.
And there has to be something intentional about sending the message. Mm-hmm. We don't know their circumstances. We don't know why they have less than us in terms of financial resources or housing resources. They're not less than.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a society that sometimes has this hero mentality. Well, I dropped off, you know, coats at a shelter. Did you shake hands with anybody? Did you give anybody a hug? Did you see anybody? No, but we dropped off the coat. So that's I'm going to remember the whole the good versus God thing, Reverend.
So I'm in the middle of teaching a confirmation class right now, and the kids come. They have to come up with their own mission project. And every single year, I have to turn down their good ideas. We're going to ring bells for Salvation Army. That is good. Thank you. It doesn't count. Right. I'm going to help do this kind of thing. That's good. Thank you. Doesn't count. I'm going to fundraise. Good. Thank you. Doesn't count. It only counts when you can tell me a name and a story. It only counts when you are in direct contact with another. That's when you've shifted. Please keep doing the good stuff, right? The good stuff is good. But when you want to make the shift, you make the shift. One of the great challenges I also gave to the congregation as a whole, which can be really fun, and I would challenge anybody to do this, just match whatever you spend on your friends and family with a gift to the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. Just keep track. Whatever it is you spend, if you have a super generous, you know, gift for all of your friends and family and beloved, that's wonderful. Give exactly the same amount to others who will not be in direct relationship or give you a thanks or give you some kind of merit for that. And I've challenged the congregation to do that. As far as I know, no one's ever accomplished it. And it's a rather threatening idea because we realize just exactly how much we are conspicuously spending mm-hmm. when you start, wait a minute, I'm supposed to give some kid I don't know the same amount I gave to my own? Yeah.
And look what you just spent. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, I can't possibly then use that as a moment to think about how you use the resources you have.
That's really good stuff. People are going to be flocking out to Victor to go to First Presbyterian Church.
Well, you're welcome to come.
To come meet the Reverend. Before I go to our only break of the hour, I'm going to kick a question to Gwen that comes from a listener named Mark, who just says, how do we draw the line on our friend groups? Some friends seem to get me a gift every year, and I think, you got me a gift? I didn't get you a gift. It's a good question, Mark, and people have been there before. Gwen, how do you do that? How do you decide, you know, who's close enough, or is it just direct conversation? What do you think?
Well, yeah, a lot of it has to do with direct conversations, but as far as on my end of who I get gifts for, it has to be, I've recently started really putting more thought into exactly how much time I've spent with this person, what mm-hmm. we've done together. Could I really say that they're a close person to me? Because, you know, you have friends, but oftentimes we call everyone our friends instead of actually thinking, well, they're more of an acquaintance. They're my friend's friend. We just happen to spend a little bit of time together. So, you know, the immediate people that know serious things that have gone on in my life over the past year, that's who I definitely am getting gifts for. And then it goes on in gradients past that. And if they did get me something, I feel, you know, really grateful for all of that, but not all the time I can go get them
sure,
a gift as
sure.
well.
Absolutely. Really interesting stuff this hour with our guests as we're talking about gift giving around the holidays and how you think about that, how you approach it, if you've made any changes to what you do over the years. And I'm sort of taking mental notes myself. And listeners, if you want to keep it coming, you can do that. Connections@WXXI.org is the email address. You can call the program 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. That's okay, because I'm going to tell you about what's coming up tomorrow on Connections. Roll the music. Tomorrow is the Rock Winter Village. This is the first year, at least that I'm aware of, they've done a Rock Winter Village right downtown. And they've got an old-timey, I don't know why it's old-timey, skating rinks, outdoor skating rinks. They feel old-timey to me. We're going to tell you what they're trying to do there. If you want to holiday shop and you want to spend more on local, that's one of the focuses there. We'll get you set with what they're doing in the Rock Winter Village tomorrow. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Is it gauche to say it would be a great holiday gift to get somebody a WXXI membership? It would be a great gift, but maybe a gauche to do it. Is it gauche, I will ask our listeners, to post, if you are in a family that has one of those Christmas trees and on Christmas morning has like 1,000 presents burying it, is it gauche to post pictures on social media of that? Dina.
Oh my goodness. Well, I'm the wrong person to ask because I actually am off most versions of social media myself.
No, I'm asking you anyway.
All right. So actually, this brings to mind a story that either one of my friends told me while we were growing up or that I read. The story is that this family who grew up working class and didn't have a lot of resources, it was important for them to have the presents drowning the tree at Christmas Eve. And that was part of what they did. And their parents borrowed against future paychecks and went into a certain amount of debt so that they could have and provide what they felt was a loving Christmas for their kids during a year that may have been deprived in other ways. So, and that's one of the moves, I think, that we can't judge, right?
You know what, Dina? Of course you've got me turned around on this. I was all ready to judge all those pictures. And you're you know, reminding me we don't know their situation.
Exactly.
We don't know their motivation.
Right. And so,
all right, I'm going to change the question then. Is it gauche to post that picture just to sort of brag? Look how much we had this year.
What do you think? I think it, oh, I'm the wrong person to ask, Evan, because I think most things on social media are gauche.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Gwen, what do you think?
I'm going to have to agree. I think so. And it's, you know, life is really funny. I was, before I went to bed last night, I was catching up on Bob's Burgers, and there was an episode of, you know, Gene, Tina, and Louise went to this little boy's birthday party, and they thought that the little boy invited pretty much everyone in the school just so that he could get a bunch of presents and so he could, you know, brag about how much he got. But it turned out that the parents just threw this crazy elaborate party that their son didn't even want just so that they could post pictures of it on social media. And that's how right. I feel a lot of that goes. They're just looking for a good photo op.
Mm. Well, I want to turn back to Reverend Colin Pritchard, the pastor for First Presbyterian Church of Victor, who mentioned earlier that this time of year, you really find it a privilege to be able to speak to congregations who are feeling the holiday strain in various ways, but mm-hmm. but not the least among them is the obligation, the gift giving. For some, it's the strain of going, you know, I have all these obligations. It's a pain. It doesn't mean much. I have to do it. For others, it's economically, it's a strain, but I my family or friends feel the obligation. I feel like I have to do it. You've been a pastor for how long?
18 years.
18 years. Yeah. Have you seen, are you hearing from those in your congregation more economic anxiety this time of year than you did 18 years ago?
Oh, gosh. Very different congregations when I started. So I've been 14 years at Victor, and in that time frame, there have been ups and downs economically. Sort of the crash of 2008, all of that. There was definitely, I heard much more about that.
Yeah.
Right now, generally, folks connected to the congregation are doing pretty well. What we do notice is that there's been a massive increase in the need locally. The food pantry, when I first got there, was serving under 100 people a year, or a month, excuse me, 100 people a month. It is now over 600 families a month. Now, we've been able to underwrite that and make that possible. So part of it is that there has been a collective resource to make that happen. They are now standalone and work with Food Link, which is wonderful. And there's lots of things structurally that made that more possible. But it doesn't deny the fact that there's been a 600% increase visually of the need in our own local area. And that's a surprise to people when they think about Victor or suburbs. How is that possible? The need for a homeless family ministry. Really? Out in Victor? Yes, absolutely in Victor. And so having that be front and center in an active ministry we literally spend our time and resource on right now is a change. So the awareness of local poverty and the awareness of local need has increased, but I think that's more of a ministry priority as opposed to a reality of it increasing.
So how do you try to spend, especially your Sundays when you've got sure. many of them listening to you, spreading a message that brings them into a place where, as their pastor, you'd like them to be this time of year?
Right. Again, it's all going to boil back down to community and communion. so that it's, is this drawing you into relationship with others? So if you give a gift, is it just an exchange? And if it's exchange of a token, that's not community yet. So wouldn't it be a wonderful thing to, if there's a strained family relationship, instead of giving your, you know, sort of the quintessential mother-in-law, give a gift certificate, how about we actually go out to lunch together and get to know each other better? Wouldn't that be an extraordinary gift? So I'm constantly pushing towards community, constantly pushing towards direct engagement with people, constantly pushing towards backing off the monetary expenses and then ramping up the investment of time. Folks will hear that all year, but maybe listening a little more consciously now.
What do you say to those who inevitably say, mm-hmm. and I would, you know, I would probably be among them. Again, this is not me trying to cast judgment, but often people will say, I hear you, Pastor. I hear what you're saying, I can write a check. I'm not making a personal connection. Mm-hmm. The check is the good thing, and in your eyes, the God thing is to volunteer time, to build relationships, to spend time. I don't have time. My life is overwhelmed.
Sure.
What do you say?
So there are some people for whom that is factually true. I often say, if somebody is a single parent with two jobs and they tell me they're busy, I believe them. But for the vast majority of other folks, it really is a question of priority of time. How much time is spent on social media, how much time is spent on video games, how much time is spent on Netflix subscriptions and making sure we got all six seasons, right? That is a question of priority. So for some people, that's factually true, in which case, thank you for your energy and your generosity. For others, there is a little voice of a challenge of what is it you really prioritize? And it is not bad at all to contribute, but that is one step removed from discipleship. So show me your calendar and I'll show you what you love.
Mm-hmm. That's a powerful statement, because some people would view that as kind of an indictment of how they're spending time. I mean, some would take that as a bit of a you're nodding a little bit.
That's correct.
Yeah. And you know, you have to be comfortable as their pastor knowing that you're making them a little uncomfortable when you mm-hmm. tell them that. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to shout out to my friend Joel Dobney, listening in Ohio. Everyone should be listening in Ohio. You should be listening to Connections everywhere you are on the WXXI mobile app. That is a great gift for somebody if their mobile phone does not have the WXXI app, by the way. Joel is constantly sort of reinvoking to me and to those around him and making all of us uncomfortable. He says, he has a short phrase that seems really basic, but it's just, people do what they want. Mm-hmm. And first time I heard that, I'm like, yeah. I mean, then I went, wait a second, I hear what you're saying. What you're saying is, when you tell me, oh, I wish I had more time to go out for coffee with a friend, I just don't. You probably do. And you probably like that person, but they're probably not in your priorities centrally. Because there are other people you're going to find time for. And if you say, I don't have time to volunteer or to get with this organization personally, I can write a check. You probably do. And it's hard to hear that. It's hard for me to hear that. Because if I went back over my calendar, I would go, oh, Pastor, what are you doing to me? What are you doing to me, man?
Now, let me let you off the hook just a little bit, which is that it's really, really important that is not understood as a guilt or a demand message. Mm-hmm. Because
the guilt is a side product. It's a byproduct.
It's a byproduct.
But we do come from a fundamental understanding that when you do those things, it actually brings deep, deep meaning and joy into your life. So it's not doing it so that God won't be mad at you. It's doing it so that you will live fully and delightedly. And when you find yourself in community and communion, that's a beautiful place to be. So it's not actually you have to do this or God will be mad, or you have to do this because it's some sort of religious obligation. You have to do this because it gives you access to the best possible life.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's a good window to us to start the close program. Gwen, what does this season mean for you most centrally?
Centrally, this season means that it is time for me to make sure that everyone that I love certainly knows that I care deeply about them and that I really love the fact that we are in each other's lives and are helping each other, because that's what humans need. We need other people.
I love that. That's wonderful. That's beautiful stuff. Dina?
Well, Colin and I have a sort of ready-made hook to talk about this season in a spiritual or moral way, but I love the fact that there are so many approaches spiritually, morally, that are not religious around this time. Solstice in particular, you know, you're halfway to the light.
Yeah.
That's lovely. And so I think the whole season itself is sort of rooted in things that are beyond gift giving. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a religious set of values. Hmm. So I think about all of that around this time of year.
Colin?
I think about all the work I have to do because
yes.
I'm a pastor and it's Christmas. But the season really centers around recognizing sort of a divine gift that's also manifest in my actual home. I have an extraordinary wife, as you have heard in this hour. I have beautiful children. I have a community that has some response capacity and a calling that is worth something. And so it becomes almost a reminder, not an event. Christmas is an opportunity when people are paying a little more attention, but the story remains the same annually. So I'm just grateful that there's a few more ears and a little more focus from folks. But it's a celebration of what has always been true and will continue to be true if we choose to prioritize it.
Well, I want to thank all of our guests for being here. That's Reverend Colin Pritchard, pastor for First Presbyterian Church of Victor, Dina Strasser, who is a writer, educator, mother, Gwen Scott, actor. I just want to thank all of you for being here and sharing your thoughts on the season, the approaches to gift giving. You've given us a lot to think about. Thank you very, very much. I appreciate that.
You bet. Thank you.
Great stuff.
And to listeners who kind of asked for this kind of programming, you know, just so we can kind of commune together, I hope you've got ideas just as I do. Wherever you are this afternoon, thanks for listening. Thanks for listening every day to Connections, which is engineered by Rob Braden, who is a gift to this program on a daily basis. Thank you, Rob. Megan Mack, the producer, of whom I would probably never be able to figure out what to give her for Christmas because she would deserve way more than I could probably figure out. She does amazing work here. I'm Evan Dawson. Hope you're surrounded by love and those who love you wherever you are, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.